Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Umicore Quarter One Update 2012. I am pleased to present Marc Grynberg, CEO, and Ludo van der Velden, CFO. For the first part of this call, let me remind you that all participants will remain in listen-only mode. There will be a question and answer session at the end of the presentation. Gentlemen, please begin.
Thank you for the introduction. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this call on Umicore's trading update for the first quarter of 2012. I will talk about the business performance and then look forward to answering your questions. Overall, we continued to perform very well in the first quarter. In certain of the end markets that we serve, both geographical markets and also product segments, growth is slowing down, and this should come as no surprise considering the evolution of GDP in Europe in particular. Despite this relative softening, we were able to increase our revenues by 11% in the first three months of the year compared to the same period in 2011, and we recorded increases across all of our businesses, across all business groups. The growth was driven largely by volume effects. As you will have seen from this morning's press release, we are also seeing some pressure on margins in some of our businesses. One reason for this has been the impact of lower metal prices on the recycling operations, not only in the recycling business group, also in the Performance and Energy Materials divisions, where a significant proportion of the zinc, cobalt, and germanium required in our products are supplied or is supplied from in-house recycling operations. Overall, though, I'm happy with the strength of our performance in the face of what remains a rather challenging and unpredictable economic environment. If we look now at how we see the year panning out, and I'm moving to slide three of the presentation, we currently expect full-year recurring EBIT to be in the range of between 370 million and 410 million euro. We're still quite early in the year, obviously, and visibility is somewhat lower than a year ago, so I feel quite comfortable with a 10% earnings range at this point in time. If we compare to the levels of last year, the main impact on EBIT margin is, I'm happy to say, self-inflicted in a way. We are, as you know, in a growth phase and have been initiating a number of major investments across our businesses in recent months. The impact of this preparation for future growth has been considerable on our depreciation costs, with depreciation likely to be some 15 million euro higher than it was in 2011. We can see that if we exclude the impact of higher depreciation charges, the range represents a similar or only slightly lower performance compared to the record levels of 2011. This is something that you can see more clearly when you look at the projected range from an EBITDA perspective, and the range then becomes 520 million-560 million euro, with the top of the range, the top end of the range being slightly above the levels posted last year. I have said on many occasions that we do not expect growth to be linear as we progress towards our 2015 goals, and this stage of our development involves a high level of investments and associated costs with corresponding revenues and profitability of the new operations in several cases yet to kick in. The precious metal smelter in Hoboken was shut down for a number of weeks in the course of March and April for regular maintenance works, and at the same time, we carried out a certain number of modifications in preparation for future debottlenecking investments. Given the timing of the shutdown and the relative importance of the recycling results in the overall picture, it is likely that second half results will be somewhat higher than in the first half. I'll now turn to the various businesses, and I'm now moving to slide number four and talk you through the performance and also give you an update on the key growth and development projects that are underway in the four business groups. Looking first at Catalysis, we posted revenue growth of 18%. This figure should be treated with caution, however, as it contains a higher level of pass-through element than last year, primarily as a result of raw materials cost increases such as rare earth oxides and substrates. This accounts, the pass-through element, I mean, accounts for or the increase in pass-through element for about one-third of the revenue growth in the first quarter. The underlying growth is therefore some 12%, which still represents a significant achievement, and we once again grew faster than the car market, in particular in Europe, where production actually contracted, and also in North America. This was mainly due to our favorable platform and product positioning, and in Asia, we grew pretty much in line with the market. In contrast to the picture in automotive catalysts, our precious metals chemistry operations recorded lower revenues year on year. If we look at the various investments we are making good progress with the construction of the technology development center and the additional production capabilities in China, as well as with the construction of the HDD production infrastructure in France. These three investments should be commissioned sometime in the third quarter of 2012. We also announced today the expansion of our technology and testing center in Brazil, where we are a clear market leader and the only catalyst company having its own testing and technology development facilities to support the automotive customers in the region. This investment should be operational by mid-2014 and will enable us to do the required testing and technology development with our customers ahead of the introduction of more stringent emission norms in South America. In energy materials, on slide 5, we recorded revenues that were 12% higher year-on-year, and this was largely due to sales volumes in rechargeable battery materials almost doubling as the demand grows for both the new NMC grades for use in automotive applications as well as for advanced lithium cobalt products that are used in ultra-portable notebooks and tablet computers. Revenues were largely stable in the cobalt and specialty materials businesses, although we did feel the impact of lower premiums both for cobalt and nickel chemicals and compounds. And one of the reasons for that is also that the comparison base is particularly high, as last year was characterized by a supply shortage for certain nickel compounds, and that had a very favorable impact on both volumes and prices. The electro-optic materials business recorded higher revenues, although margins were also under pressure. The main reason for the higher revenues was the growth in sales of substrates, although it remains to be seen how the demand for these materials in terrestrial PV applications holds up in the coming months, and this will largely depend on how well this niche performs against the backdrop of the turmoil in the PV industry. Revenues in thin film products were lower year on year, primarily due to the slowdown in demand from the producers of displays, some of which having delayed investment in new coating lines. Production of NMCs, as you know, is ramping up at our new plant in Kobe in Japan, and we're also ready to start up the capacity that has just been added in Korea as part of our most recent wave of expansion investments. Given the scale and the speed of the recent investments, notably in rechargeable battery materials, the depreciation impact is expected to have the highest proportional impact on energy materials with regard to full-year profitability, and this effect is being somewhat exacerbated by related startup costs as well as the impact of lower prices on the for the germanium and cobalt recycling and refining operations. Investments, particularly in rechargeable battery materials activities, are likely to remain at a high level as we continue to cater for increased customer demand. Looking now at Performance Materials, we again saw revenue growth in line or slightly above global GDP levels, and this was driven by good growth in building products, platinum engineered materials, and electroplating. In building products, we grew sales volumes against a backdrop of supportive market conditions in Germany and Benelux, and continued to generate a high proportion of sales from products with a high added value, and in particular from surface-treated products. Platinum engineered materials benefited from a high level of replacement equipment orders from manufacturers of high purity glass, while in electroplating, revenues were pretty much in line with those of last year, with sales of solutions for decorative applications counterbalancing softer demand for electrolytes used in applications such as printed circuit boards. The technical materials activities recorded slightly higher sales, with strong demand for brazing alloys more than compensating for lower demand for contact materials used in electrical equipment. Zinc chemicals recorded lower sales volumes in most, if not all, product categories, and also felt the negative impact of a lower received zinc price and a relative scarcity of zinc residues in the recycling activities. Our Element 6 Abrasives joint venture recorded higher sales volumes, but margins were lower due to a less favorable product mix. Investments in performance materials remain at a high level, and the previously announced investments in building products and platinum engineered materials remain well on track. We also announced today two new investments in zinc chemicals. The first of these involves the relocation of our plant in Changsha in the province of Hunan in China to a greenfield site that will involve a technological upgrade and enable us to anticipate tightening environmental norms in China. We expect that this will reinforce our competitive advantage in the coming years in the Chinese domestic market. We are also expanding the production of zinc oxide at our plant in India. Finally, let's look at recycling, and I'm now moving to slide number 7. Revenues in the recycling were up by 8%, and the volume of materials that we processed at our Hoboken operation was somewhat below the levels of the same period in 2011 as a result, as I explained earlier or alluded to earlier, of the earlier than usual start of the annual maintenance program. And this being said, the supply markets remain extremely robust and arrivals of materials remained at a high level during the period, with the exception of spent catalysts possibly influenced by somewhat lower platinum prices. This supportive environment continued to boost refining charges, and set against this, we felt a negative impact from the lower prices and reduced demand for some minor metals, and particularly what we sometimes refer to as technology metals. In other parts of the business, the jewelry and industrial metals activities recorded higher sales volumes. Although sales of gold used in luxury jewelry applications and also silver materials used for industrial and chemicals applications were higher, there were signs that demand will soften in these sectors as we progress through the year. The overall market conditions for precious metals management operations remain favorable, although not to the same extent as last year. In battery recycling, we continue to test various feeds for the new UHT technology, and we continue to assess the market potential for the future deployment of this new technology. If we look at our investment programs, we have a full pipeline in recycling. The upgrade of the sampling activities in Hoboken is well on track, and we are also investing in a new biological water treatment facility at the plant that will enable us to drive metal emissions to water still lower. We're also setting up a new dismantling center for spent automotive rechargeable batteries in North America that will be in Maxton, North Carolina, and are also set to expand the capacity for silver recycling at our operations in Thailand. Overall, we continue on our growth path, and we continue to produce strong performances. While the full-year recurring EBIT may not beat the year record levels of last year, this is largely due to the impact of higher investment levels on depreciation. From an EBITDA perspective, our performance is likely to be pretty much in line with last year, despite the more challenging economic environment. With that, I would like to now hand the line over to you and address any questions that you might have.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our Q&A session. If you wish to ask a question, please press the code 01 on your telephone keypad and you will enter a queue. After you are announced, please ask your question. So once again, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. And our first question comes from the line of Rian O'Connor of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Please go ahead, Rian O'Connor.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. I'm going to ask three questions. Starting off with the depreciation, you very helpfully given the guidance that depreciation will be 15 million higher this year. Given the large number of projects you have coming on stream later this year and indeed going into next year, are we to look for a similar step up in depreciation in over the next couple of years as well? That's the first question. The second question is on battery recycling. Obviously, that business is now up and running. You've got some dismantling centres going. Can you talk a little bit about when you expect profitability from that business, given legislation that's changing at the moment? And the third question is on the performance materials division. There's quite a lot of investment going on in this division as well. And for your Vision 2015, you pointed to this division as more or less GDP growth. Why is it such a low-growth division? Are you investing all this in extra projects? That's my three questions. Thank you.
Okay, so depreciation is indeed going to increase further in the next couple of years, given the high level of and the number of investment projects we have in the pipeline or already in construction. And the increase in 2013 could be even slightly higher than the increase that you see this year, because our investment levels are likely going to be higher in 2012, this year I mean, compared to last year. So and we're investing more than depreciation, which creates indeed the additional depreciation charges for the future. So yes, indeed, that's what you should expect for the next couple of years, and you should expect that to continue.
Okay.
In battery recycling, I wouldn't dare saying that the business is up and running. We're still in the pilot phase from a technology point of view in scaling up the technology, that the UHT technology that will be used as the first step in the recycling process for spent lithium-ion batteries. And while the legislation is making progress, on the other side, the availability of spent batteries for recycling remains extremely limited because of the limited penetration of electrified vehicles in the past 10 or 15 years or so. And obviously, the batteries are only going to be available for recycling after the vehicles have reached, or once the vehicles have reached, the end of their useful life. So it's going to take a number of more years for the business to reach a certain level of maturity, I would say. And as I mentioned in previous discussions, this is not likely to happen before 2016, 2017. And of course, by that time, we will also need to have larger scale facilities to address a growing supply. So it is not, for the time being, we still see that as a development activity as far as the battery recycling is concerned, and at the same time we continue to fine-tune and test the technology for possibly for other material fields. Now, coming to your last question, the investment levels in performance materials are relatively high indeed, and while the growth ambitions are more or less in line with GDP. with global GDP. Now, you may recall that in many of these performance materials businesses, we have a strong European positioning and a relatively smaller presence outside of Europe. And given the growth prospects of Europe for the next few years, which are going to probably be or remain below worldwide average, if we have the ambition of growing at GDP or slightly above GDP rate, we need to have a balanced portfolio of activities, both from a product point of view and from a geographical point of view. So it is important for us to establish a better presence for these performance materials businesses outside of Europe, and so that we indeed can reach a more balanced portfolio of activities and thereby grow in line with global GDP and not just European GDP. So that's one of the key drivers. And in some other cases, like in the specific example of building products investment in France, clearly it is product innovation and a successful market response to product innovation that is driving the investment.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, and our next question comes from the line of Rupesh Madlani from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Three questions from me, please. First, could you comment on the competition in the recycling segment? Has that changed at all from the last couple of quarters? Second, with respect to Hoboken, perhaps you could comment on the length of how long was the facility closed. You mentioned a period of weeks. And perhaps you could also comment a little bit about the modifications that were completed in and above the standard maintenance, and if that does anything to potential debottlenecking and capacity expansion in the future. And then lastly, perhaps you could comment on the progress of UHT and any changes or updates on views on potential introduction to the market.
Okay, so competition in recycling has not fundamentally changed over the past few months. We don't see major moves in the market. I think the most significant development that we saw is the one that I mentioned during the introduction, and it's not a competitive move. It's the fact that the availability of certain raw materials is changing in function of metal prices, and that's no surprise. I mean, spent catalyst has typically been a somewhat volatile source of supply, and very much correlated to platinum prices. But this being said, indeed, we see no significant changes in the competitive landscape, in competitive positioning, or in competitive behavior on the market for the time being. Moving to your second question, I wouldn't want to be too specific about the shutdown, the maintenance shutdown. It was a number of weeks. And actually, it was slightly longer than usual because we decided indeed to take advantage of the regular maintenance shutdown to complete a number of new investments to some of the peripheral equipment of the smelter, such that debottlenecking investment that we have in mind can more easily be completed when we decide to push the button and go ahead. So indeed, the reality is that we have the idea, or we have the ambition to increase the capacity and the throughput of our main smelter operation in Hoboken. You know that this is a unique piece of, this is a unique facility and that has unique capabilities from a technological point of view. So any additional tonnage that we can add is of significant potential value and would help us create value. So that's why we are preparing now actively future investments to increase somewhat the capacity of the smelter. That's a process that will take a few years. And in the past, you have noticed that we have increased capacity marginally year after year. At this point in time, as I mentioned earlier, we need to do some more work to the infrastructure, the utilities, and some other peripheral equipment to enable future additional increases in capacity and future debottlenecking, and that's what we are preparing for the time being. As far as UHT is concerned, I'm afraid there isn't much to report at this point in time. We are continuing to fine-tune the process, and we are continuing to work in campaigns with different batches of material mixes. But again, nothing really special to report at this point in time, I'm afraid.
Very good. Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Arno Husens from Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you very much. I have three questions. First of all, concerning the cathode material sales that you claimed that they've close to doubled, I was wondering what the outlook would be for the full year 2012, if this is a base effect or if this is a long-standing effect. And how much does cathode materials weigh within energy materials, just to have an idea of the weight of that business. The second question, well, it actually was already asked with an update on the UHT pilot plan, so I guess we can skip that. And the third question is an update on HDD platforms and wins. If you can comment on that, please.
Okay, so the RBM, the growth in cathode materials was not due to a base effect. Because you have a little bit of seasonality in this business, with the first quarter typically being somewhat more subdued. I mean, let's keep in mind that this is an Asian business to a large extent, or almost exclusively, and so the first quarter tends to be somewhat lower than the rest of the year. So you have a valid comparison base with the first quarter of 2011. No, it is really the effect of the result of significant growth in demand for NMCs for use in automotive applications. And let's bear in mind that even if the number of electrified cars that are being sold in the market is not spectacular yet, the volume of materials required, the quantity of materials required to power these vehicles is quite significant. So it is driven by that development, and it is also driven by a significant increase in demand for high-density lithium cobalt materials that are used in high-end computers and tablet PCs. That's also a trend that I indicated a while ago, and that is confirmed. So you should expect more of that throughout 2012, and obviously beyond 2012, I hope. And that's why we continue to expand capacity and continue to prepare for further expansion in our key markets. It is really taking off very, very nicely in terms of volumes. How much that activity weighs in energy materials, I'm not going to disclose. We don't want to give a breakdown by a business unit or business line within the business group, but obviously, as you would expect from a revenue point of view, it is becoming a substantial factor. In terms of HDD contract wins, there isn't anything new to be reported since we talked last time on that subject, which was a couple of months ago. So we continue to prepare for the production. So we continue to build the production lines that we will need, and that is, as you know, in France for the European market, in China, and in some other places. So that continues, but there is nothing to report in terms of market developments.
Can I just ask one more, let's say, follow-up question on cathode material? Can you give us an idea of, your production capacity rate? I mean, if you're running, if you still have excess capacity in NMC, or do you need to quickly ramp up production to satisfy demand?
It's the latter. We'll need to ramp up production fairly quickly. Will need to be also fairly quick in preparing for the next wave of expansion.
Okay, thank you very much.
And our next question comes from the line of Wouter van der Hagen from KBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. One question left on precious metals refining. You mentioned a negative impact on margins from lower prices of certain specialty metals. I was wondering if you could be more particular on which metals you were talking about. What was the relative importance within precious metals refining last year? And if you were able to do any hedging on these metals. Thank you.
Now, Walter, these are metals that we cannot hedge, mm-hmm. Typically. And sometimes, but that's really the exception, on very rare occasions, we may have back-to-back agreements with certain suppliers or customers. But typically, these are metals that we cannot hedge, mm-hmm. and which represent, therefore, an open exposure. We're talking about metals like tellurium, like ruthenium, etc., rhodium, mm-hmm. Which is a precious metal, but ruthenium or tellurium are not, which are used in technology applications and for which the demand was much lower than in the course of last year. So in some cases you had volume impacts, in some other cases you had price impacts, and sometimes you had a combination of both.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of relative importance of these metals in last year's contribution of precious metals refining?
Sorry, I had omitted that part of the question. It's probably because I was not prepared to give you a response on that. I'm not willing to disclose too much detail, and this is a fairly... this is a changing parameter. Every year, every quarter, mm-hmm. Because it depends really on the mix of supply. So I cannot really provide you with some meaningful guidance that you could mm-hmm. use in a model, I'm afraid.
Okay, thank
but
you.
You should assume that if we mention that impact, it's because it is worth mentioning.
Yep.
So it is a sizable number.
Okay, clear. Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Tony Jones of Redburn. Please go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got three. With more regulatory tightening and driving the need for more complex catalysts, is it the case that you need to offer more service and R&D support, so that's actually diluting or constraining the opportunity for you to improve margin in that business, so you're having to invest in hand-holding for your customers? Then, secondly, on HDD, is it reasonable to still assume that this business, although being small, actually becomes margin positive? And what is your timescale? How long do you expect that to be the case? Or when do you expect it to be the case? And then finally, just clarifying a point you mentioned on the smelter, I just wanted to understand whether this debottlenecking project, is it associated with the assay expansion project? Because I thought that this was only going to be a couple of percent volume expansion next year or so. Or is there something more significant? If you could just clarify that, that would be great. Thank you.
Let me start with the last question. Indeed, there is a connection to the expansion and upgrade of the assaying and sampling facility, because the assaying and sampling is actually the entrance to the plant and the first step in the recycling process. So this is indeed the first bottleneck that has to be addressed if we want to increase capacity. So it is connected. It is not the same. It's an entire program that will require a number of investment steps and investment projects, and the assaying and sampling expansion is one of them. The modifications that we are bringing to the smelter is another one, and the what we do to the infrastructure with the, for instance, with the water treatment and some other projects that are in the pipeline would also all concur to the same objective of, at a certain point in time, be able to process more materials through the plant. Coming to HDD margins, yes, of course, we expect HDD to contribute positively to the results. when is still, I would say, it's a bit too early to tell exactly when. But the reality is that, as you know, that we will commission our new production line for HDD in the course of the third quarter of this year. Then we'll start to ramp up production, and the majority of the production ramp-up will take place in 2013, in the course of 2013, when we have SOP for some of the Euro 6 programs. So I would say, or would think, that it would be unrealistic to expect a positive contribution before the ramp-up has taken place. And then I would ask you maybe to repeat the first question, because I'm not sure I fully understood the entire question.
Yeah, sure. It was just that in the AutoCAD business, I was just wondering whether, as customers demand more complex catalyst units, does this mean that you need to invest ever more in research or technology or service centers, and that investment will therefore constrain your ability to improve profitability?
Yes and no. Yes to the first part of your question, and no, not necessarily as far as the second part of the question is concerned. Yes, we need more research, more development, more applied technology, more testing, as the catalyst and the catalyst, or I would say the entire emission control systems, are getting more complex. So there is indeed a little bit more hand-holding that is necessary, and more sophisticated, I would say, joint development projects and programs that are being run with the customers' engineering and research teams. Yes, that creates a need for additional capabilities, and that's one of the reasons we also continue to invest in technology development and testing capabilities around the world. It's not just about building testing capacity. It's, to a large extent, upgrading the capabilities indeed to prepare for more stringent emission norms and the resulting requirements in terms of catalyst complexity. And does it have an impact on our ability to drive margins? By definition, the investment and the costs that we make in research and development and testing have an impact on margins through depreciation and through research or testing costs. But at the same time, this is also what enables us to win business and win the most, what we see as the most rewarding pieces of business, where the highest margins can be made because of the degree of sophistication. And if you look at how the AutoCAD business of Umicore has developed over the past 18 months or so, you will see that we have constantly managed to outpace the market growth, and this is partly a result of our successful positioning on the more sophisticated and the most demanding platforms.
Great. Thank you very much.
And our next question comes from Mark de Brouwer of Petercam. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Three small petty questions. First, in catalyst, given the importance of the Japanese market and the low exposure of Umicore to that market, I don't fully understand how Umicore managed to move in line with the market. Could you provide some hints regarding that? Secondly, in rechargeable batteries material, the lower product premiums, is it in relation with portable application only, or for automotive ones as well? Secondly, it is not very important, but could you provide some hints regarding the evolution of net working capital and net debt? Thank you very much.
Okay, so actually, you're right. We are in Japan relatively smaller than in the rest of the world when it comes to automotive catalyst market shares. But then, if you look at the entire picture of Asia, this is not necessarily the case. And if you look at Korea, for instance, we have a a relatively stronger position than in average in the world, given the fact that there are two leading players in Korea and a very distant number three. So overall, I would say indeed we are relatively smaller in Japan. Actually, we performed extremely with the limited market share that we have with Japanese OEMs. We performed very well and continue to win business and win market share. And the rest of the explanation is to be found in our very successful positions in Korea and China.
So does it mean that in China, where the market was down by 4%, you were into a positive territory?
Suffice to say that we moved in line with the market in Asia.
Okay, thanks.
The premiums in battery materials are continue to be under pressure, indeed. And I mean that's a development that I explained a while ago already. You know that in certain segments there is a lot of competition. That also is true for certain NMC grades that can be used in electronic applications. You know, it's a very 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 complex landscape in a way with high-end applications, lower-end applications, and zillions of different product grades and families. It's, I would say, overall premiums continue to be under pressure, and obviously it is important for us to continue what we do best, which is to position ourselves in the high-end segments where the demands, the technical demands, are the highest, and where we can grow fast. But we have to live with price pressure. This is going to remain probably a feature of this market for a while.
Yes, so apparently also for, but perhaps to allow a lesser extent for high-end applications.
Indeed, where I mean those applications where there is more technology differentiation provide opportunities to command better premiums and margins. Now, also you have to bear in mind something that I explained that I explained a while ago already as well, and that is that in the automotive segment, it is important for us to help the car manufacturers and the battery manufacturers make electrified vehicles more affordable. And that's why it is important to reach scale effects as quickly as possible. We talked earlier about the need to ramp up quickly the new investments. It's also because the scale effects are important to help our customers reach themselves the scale effects that they need to make these applications more affordable.
Thanks.
Then on networking capital, we had, I would say, some positive effects in the first quarter of this year, so some reduction in working capital requirements. That is also partly due to a reduction in metal prices across the board, while volumes continue to increase. But I wouldn't draw too many conclusions from that. You know that the working capital requirements changes fairly quickly in function of sales and precious metals, sales volumes and precious metals prices, and so I wouldn't necessarily extrapolate from the improvement in the first quarter.
Okay, and regarding the net debt?
Net debt was lower at the end of March than at the end of December of last year, and this is partly the result indeed of the fact that we had some positive working capital variances, while actually our CapEx remain well below the level of the operating cash flow that we generate.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Martin Dunwoody of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Can I start with the recycling business? I think you've been pretty clear, if I've understood it right, that the mix isn't quite as good as it was in the business at the moment, largely because of AutoCATs and other things being held back. Am I thinking about this too simplistically in terms of to see an improvement in that mix, then we just really need to see platinum prices start to improve again, and that will show through in your business? And then secondly, on the rechargeable batteries, again, as you say, the pricing pressure isn't anything new, but are you seeing any more competition in that business, or is that more it just carries on being competitive as it is, or is that getting any worse? I've just noticed a couple of other people, competitors, talking about focusing more on that area at the moment. And then lastly, on the autocatalyst business, by default, it sounds like you're taking market share because you're positioned in the more successful vehicle platforms. I don't know if you could maybe give some color, some numbers to whether that is the case, how much you are taking, and also whether you see that just as a cyclical kind of market share phenomenon just because of the platforms you're in, or whether that's a more sustainable market share gain. Thanks.
Okay, so first of all, on the recycling, the mix is not... you said that the mix was not as good as last year. This is not the case. The mix is at least as good as last year, and this is reflected in higher average refining charges. And actually the fact that spent automotive catalyst our arrivals are somewhat down is not so much impacting the result, because this is one in 200 material feeds or sorts that we utilize, that we process at in our recycling business. So that's and clearly you're right in saying that the spent catalyst supply will improve if platinum price recovers, but that's not key to our mix optimization and to our profitability. So the mix was very good, and as I mentioned, this was reflected in higher average refining charges. And what was less favorable than last year is what I mentioned earlier, that the prices or volumes for certain secondary metals, and as I mentioned also, the timing of our maintenance shutdown meant that also we processed somewhat lower volumes than in the first quarter of or in the first part of 2011. But the mix is very good, and we don't see actually anything changing or any unfavorable development coming up in that respect. In terms of rechargeable battery materials, competition continues to be very intensive. However, I do not see today newcomers and new players actually entering the segment or entering successfully the segment. It is really the competition between the existing players that is playing out fully. And of course, there continues to be a lot of announcements about technological breakthroughs and new products and new processes and new players having won business. Don't extrapolate too much from these announcements. There is typically a distance between the announcement and the real market presence. So I don't see today, again, significant changes or major changes in the competitive landscape. In terms of the automotive catalyst market shares, I wouldn't want to go into a figure discussion, because I bet that you, if you added up the market shares that would be reported by the catalyst players, you would probably end up well above 100% of the market. So that would probably not prove very helpful. The reality, indeed, is that in the past 18 months or so, we have grown faster than car production. That is partly due to the fact that the catalyst industry itself is growing faster than car production because of the tightening emission norms and the impact thereof on the value of catalysts. It is also partly, as I mentioned earlier, the effect of higher pass-through costs that are impacting the revenues without impacting the bottom line. And the residual growth over and above the market pace is indeed I would say, an indication of market share wins. And I think it's difficult to extrapolate for the long term because there are platforms we win, there are platforms we lose. You need to have a balanced customer and platform portfolio in order to make sure that on average you have at least that the vehicles that are selling well are at least making up for the vehicles that are not selling so well in the market. And clearly, indeed, we are doing well in that respect for the time being, given our very good positioning in platforms, on fuel-efficient platforms that are continuing to gain in popularity. And if you look at the trends in terms of fuel prices in the various regions, I think this bodes well for Umicore, given our positioning in the segment. But in the long run, things can change, and that's why we also continue to invest massively in the technological development in that business, because we want to continue to build our positioning on sound technological advantages.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Andrew Stott of Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mark. I was a bit late to the call, so apologies if you've touched on this. On your guidance on EBITDA year on year, are there any specific one-off numbers I should be putting into the model that obviously that I need to strip out for 13? And the second question sort of comes back to what was just really being touched upon. I'm just interested in your own view. Is, you know, if you're seeing 12% underlying growth in catalysts, and I feel that's probably been shared generally by the market, at least close to that. Why do you think platinum and palladium prices have been so sleepy now for, you know, almost 12 months? Do you think it's ETF demand? Do you think it's the effect of the South African rand? I'm just wanting to understand what you're getting back from the customer base, the supply chain. Thanks.
Andrew, there are no one-off effects in the EBITDA projections or comparisons year on year. What we are really providing as guidance is what they are calling a recurring EBITDA, so stripped off any one-off effects.
Okay, thanks.
Your other question, that's a very intriguing point, I would say, for us too. Platinum and PGM prices in general dropped quite substantially in 2008-2009 when the recession hit us and when car production volumes dropped almost overnight. And then they started to recover, and except rhodium, actually, which has not really recovered. And that's also a conundrum, I would say, because it may indicate that there are sufficient inventories all over the place. But for platinum and palladium, given the continued, I would say, demand and sustained demand from the automotive sector, which represents 50% or north of 50% of platinum usage in the world, it is a little bit of a mystery of why platinum and palladium prices are not following the car production more closely, and especially so as with new regulations and tighter regulations coming up, there will be a need for certain additional PGM quantities in certain applications, and with the emergence of heavy-duty applications, clearly platinum will be also in higher demand. So I'm a bit puzzled by the idea that this could have been entirely factored in by all market participants so far, and considering also that the supply tends to be somewhat constrained by production issues and by the depletion of certain rich ore bodies, or getting closer to depletion of certain rich ore bodies. It's a mystery to me, I must say.
Okay, well, thanks for taking the questions. Cheers, Mark.
Okay, our final question comes from Dennis Lepidatu of Kempen & Co. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I have a couple of questions, and I would prefer to ask them one by one, if that's all right.
Okay.
Firstly, I was wondering, how do recycling fees compare for spent automotive catalysts and for electronic scrap, and whether supplies of electronic scrap are more difficult to process and hence require a larger fee?
I'm not going to, I cannot tell you, and actually we do not disclose the fees for individual sorts of materials, but it's two completely different, indeed, feed sorts that require different treatments. And clearly, electronic scrap and the kind of electronic scrap that we process is highly complicated to process because of the number of substances, organic and inorganic substances, that are contained in electronic scrap. So that's materials that are extremely complicated to recycle if you want to recover and purify all of the components.
Okay, and would you say this the recycling process is unique, or you have a relatively higher competitive advantage in this part of the business with for electronic scrap rather than for spent automotive catalysts?
The higher the complexity, the higher the competitive advantage that we have. Indeed,
okay.
That's right, yes.
And in terms of guidance regarding the revenue split, could you provide a rough guidance on how the revenue splits between fees and actual material exposure?
No, again, we typically do not do that. And I guess you're still talking about the recycling business.
Yes.
We typically do not do that, and because it's something that is actually negotiated on a contract-by-contract basis and can change from one contract renewal to the other. So we prefer not to do that, and also because we don't want to disclose any commercial or commercially sensitive information to the market. Sorry about that.
Okay. It was worth trying. And, okay, overall, on volumes, also at recycling, do you expect volume growth for the full year, despite the longer maintenance and the debottlenecking activities?
It's still a bit too early to tell, but I would expect volumes in the remainder of the year to be higher than what we have seen so far, indeed, after the maintenance work, yeah.
Okay, and a last one on recycling regarding the cost side.
Yep.
Do you expect cost, because normally they are quite fixed for recycling, do you expect large incremental increases in cost for 2012 as we will have a full year of the UHD plant running?
We have some increase in costs in our recycling operations. That's the result of our continued expansion of the business. And I mean, the UHT pilot facility is in full pilot operation, so that indeed, compared to 2011, means a higher cost picture. Mm-hmm. And also the number of projects that we are working on, whether it's related to environmental performance improvements or preparation for future debottlenecking, is indeed meaning additional costs are being encouraged to prepare for future growth.
Mm-hmm.
We also see some further cost increases, but that's not specific to recycling. That's affecting Umicore and many businesses, I would say, in Europe. That's energy costs continue to increase. Fortunately for us, it is not the major cost component, but still it is something that we watch, and there are a limited mitigation action plan that we can that we have access to in order to address that.
Okay, great. And the last question is on energy materials. Actually, how do you look at the continued pricing pressure in rechargeable battery materials? Because the return on capital employed has already decreased quite substantially last year. Do you think this trend will continue?
The trends that you have seen so far are there to stay for a while because of our very high levels of investments and the high level of investments that are required to bring new materials and new technologies to the market, and in order to continue to cope with fast growing demand from our from our customers. So indeed, we know that for a while we have sacrificed some returns as we invest massively to grow the business. I think that's a fairly normal profitability profile for a business that is growing at that pace. And of course, at the right point in time and in due time, the business will have to earn its cost of capital and more than its cost of capital so that we can further the growth and continue to invest and maintain our leadership. So the teams know that, and don't worry, they have sufficient pressure, and they know they have to address that that challenge of growing while preparing for future profitability.
Okay, great. Clear enough. Thanks a lot.
So there are no more questions in queue. Gentlemen, do you wish to begin closing comments?
Yes. So again, I would like, as a closing statement, to repeat that I'm very satisfied with the continued strong performance of all of our businesses. We are really on track in terms of our growth ambitions. And from a profitability point of view, I've provided you with the guidance that I think is the most realistic view of what Umicore can generate this year. And again, from an EBITDA point of view, this is roughly in line with the performance of last year, which, given the more challenging economic environment, is a source of high satisfaction. I would like also to thank you for your participation to the call and your questions. And, of course, if you have follow-on questions, please feel free to get in touch with our investor relations team. They will be pleased to address your questions as usual. Thank you, and bye-bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for attending.